I'm Alex Chadwick, back with Day to Day and our series this week, Beyond Prison, the story of a young man named James Gilbert. After years in and out of prison and drug rehab, James started to transform his life while serving time with the help of a fellow inmate, Mike Guglielmo. Yesterday, we heard how another prisoner had confronted James and how Mike stepped in with some difficult advice for his friend.
Other people are going to start disrespecting you, and you can't have that. Whether you win or lose, you got to hurt him, and you can hurt him.
New Hampshire Public Radio's Dan Gorenstein now to continue the story.
James decided to take his friend's advice.
I don't think there's any in-between in prison. You're either a predator or you're a prey. I didn't want to be prey. I didn't want to be a predator. But if the time came, you know, I would stand up for myself as much as I could.
The guy he had a beef with was a black dude. You know, he's probably 260 pounds. He was a big dude. After work, he used to always come right back to the pod. Well, this time he didn't come back to the pod. He stayed down in the yard and walked around, did this, did that, waited for about a half an hour before he came back to the pod because he knew. He had an instinct that there was going to be a problem.
I mean, I was in pretty good condition then. I was working out on a regular basis. I was about 6%, and I was pretty strong. And the thing that I wanted to make a point of was I wanted to give this guy a fair one. I didn't want to hit him when he was down. I didn't want to use any weapons. I didn't want to take any cheap shots.
He knew that he ran his mouth to the wrong person. And when he came up on that pod, he came on the pod, and Jimmy said, "What's up now, motherfucker?" and punched him right in his face. And the guy stumbled back. He was a big dude, and he tried to take his shirt off, and Jimmy, bang, hit him again. He stumbled on me. He hit him again. The guy stumbled. He hit the ground. When he hit the ground, Jimmy put the boots to his chest. Boom!
And he ended up getting hurt pretty bad. I mean, knocked a couple of his teeth out, and I had gotten so wound up during the fight because he had grabbed me around my throat at one point that I kind of lost it. And when he did fall that time, he started having basically a small seizure. And I just proceeded to kick him. There was blood all over the pod, all over me, and that's all that I saw. And I just was, like, out of control.
He was laying on the wall, knocked out cold, and I said, "That's enough. Back up."
I didn't really know what was going on, except for that there was this threat in front of me. And once I got away from him and out of that little bubble that I was in, I was like, "Oh, shit. You know, what the hell just went on?"
The fallout from the fight was extensive. Both inmates spent time in solitary confinement. Rumors spread that the brawl was racially motivated. But Mike was well known throughout the prison, and he played the role of mediator and tamped down tensions. James came back to congratulations from many whites for battling a black man. But James says he had no interest in the racial politics inside the prison. He withdrew into his cell and his regular routine. He studied, he planned for his life after prison, and perhaps the most unusual part of that routine, he and Mike hosted their weekend dance parties.
Every Saturday night was club night, so every night there would always be like the old 70s and 80s dance music playing, and we'd have everybody out in the pod and pissing off the old guys in the pod, and then all the young guys would be out there dancing.
All that old dance music stuff, you know. Boogie Woogie, Grandmaster Flash, Double Dutch Bus, DJ Save My Life Tonight, all different stuff. Donna Summers, and of course Barry White was great. I love Barry White. I want to hold you and make you mine. Don't want to control you. Just have a good time living in ecstasy. And I'd hook up all kinds of crazy wires to get this one station, and we'd listen to the classics for 3 hours and shit, you know. And I'd put a red cover over my light and stuff, and I would just blast the stereo, man. And I'd be in the cell dancing, have the door open, pop out of the cell dancing, and people would just walk by crazy, out of his mind. That was my serenity, my peace. It was to listen to club night, to have club night on a Saturday night.
Whether it was moments like club night or the coursework, Mike liked what he was seeing in James. But when it came to James' relationship with his family, he wasn't meeting Mike's expectations. The older inmate was indebted to his family. They bought his school books. They paid his tuition to get his bachelor's and master's degrees in prison. Mike pushed James to reconnect to his folks.
They didn't make me, but he'd be like, he would egg me on to, like, call my parents and talk to them about stuff. Like, if I ever told him that something that pissed me off or whatever, he's like, "Well, why don't you call him and tell him? You know, it's kind of like, I don't want to hear it. Why don't you tell your parents? But I think in his way, it was kind of his way of me communicating and opening up a channel of communication.
You only get one family in life, and I could see that he wanted to make things right with them too. And when he invited his mother in to see his first weightlifting competition and try to make her proud and whatnot, and I got to meet her, I could see that they were trying to make things right. People do things wrong. Maybe they did some things wrong. Maybe he did some things wrong. Who's to blame? Who knows? Who cares? It's done. You can't go back. You got to go forward. And so I think everybody did.
The first time I ever met Mike,
that's Rose Gilbert, James' mother,
was at the weightlifting, and he introduced himself, and I just went home feeling so good because I really liked how positive Mike was. I really liked how smart Mike was. I really liked how he always talked about how, yep, I've been telling James, you know, family is everything. There's nothing like family. And I just thought on my way home, I was like, oh, what a gift. What a positive influence he has on James's life. And I honestly believe that that might be why I could see some changes going on with James, too.
He wanted that emotion and that support and that love in family and the pat on the back from the father. And he started to get all that, you know, as he started to get closer to the end of his bid. And he started straightening out and educating himself and letting him know his plans. And he did that, you know, and that's when things started to go away and get better.
Since James was a preteen, his father, Ed Gilbert, believed prison would save his son. But Ed Gilbert never imagined that it would be because of the friend James made while he was there.
If the child doesn't have a parent, well, then the child has to find someone who'll give him what the parents won't give him. The child needs to have guidance. They need guidance so bad.
And love.
And children love to be within their parameters. They function so well within parameters. And if the parents aren't giving this to them, they need to find somebody that will.
For NPR News, I'm Dan Gorenstein.
Tomorrow, Life on the Outside for James Gilbert and Mike Guglielmo as the Beyond Prison series concludes. And you can hear previous reports of this series at our website, npr.org.